Why don't we field our first questions, if anybody has any questions of Mike and his team.
Maggie Gilliam, Gilliam & Company. I wonder if Ed could elaborate a little bit about the distribution center consolidation in Japan, what's involved and what you hope to accomplish.
I would bet he could. Ed?
Thank you for visiting our country. We appreciate it, and I hope you spent some money while you were there. We have 39 distribution centers in Japan, and our intention is over a couple of year time period to consolidate and eliminate approximately 20 of those distribution centers. Now, some of those distribution centers are not huge facilities. Some of them are, you know, small and medium sized, but we believe there's a lot of efficiencies that can be done in the transportation network.
Okay, right here. Please state your name and firm, please.
Deborah Weinzig at Citigroup. Mike, you went into some of the details with regards to the opportunity in global procurement. Can you talk about not only for resale goods, but also not for resale, and what inning are you in with regards to both?
As a matter of fact, Deborah, it is true. We're working both on retail product, and Andy gave a good example with the cookware, I think, but there was one picture that I really didn't stop take the time to show that just showed, you might think it's kind of an odd picture, it showed a sales floor, but the wood-looking floor of a selling floor that you would see in the Rogers store and others, that's just one of many, many examples that the Global Procurement Division is working on to leverage purchasing a product not for sale, not for resale, where we put capital, invested capital into building stores. So it's material for stores that we use in constructing around the world. It would be like purchasing supplies, bags. So the GP group is contributing millions of dollars of benefit. But I would also tell you, and I know Jeff Mako and the team would say, we're really just beginning. There is so much opportunity that's untapped. I think Jeff's approaching it the right way. Several new leaders have joined the team. A real focus on quality, a focus on raising the expectations. Last week's message at our supplier summit in China, it was a message to our 1,000 suppliers, but really all suppliers, whether it's retail or not for retail, that we are raising expectations on the way how product is produced and on the quality of product, but without really raising prices also. But the real key to that, I think, we're raising expectations for ourselves, how we buy product, how we source product, and was a key part of the message internal at last week's meeting. But I think, again, we still have so much upside in the area of a procurement of products globally.
Let's go to the back here.
I'm sorry.
Question on Japan, Ed. As you look at the opportunity to consolidate the market over the next several years, will that be necessary to do acquisitions, or can you consolidate it just organically?
Well, the opportunity for a consolidation is really quite significant. When we look at that chart of showing the market shares, you have a lot of players with very small market shares. I personally don't think the majority of our growth will come organically. Building a lot of new square footage in Japan is not necessarily that easy. There is a fair amount of existing square footage that we may be able to acquire, as in taking over an existing building. And we are open to the idea of exploring M&A opportunities in Japan.
Okay. Over here.
Hi, John Zolaitis, Buckingham Research. You really hammered home the message that you're trying to improve ROI in international markets, and you called out Canada specifically as a market where the ROI is actually above that of the United States. Can you talk about what is the gap now overall on ROI, looking at international versus the U.S., and over what time frame do you think you can bring the international markets as a group up to and in line with the U.S.? Thank you.
First, I think Wan Ling's statement was that Canada's ROI is actually higher than the company average, so that's the total Walmart. Canada is higher than our average for the total. Frankly, I don't look at Walmart U.S. and say, how do we beat Walmart U.S.? We're looking at long-term. How do we raise ROI step by step in the international markets, both by market and then the total segment reporting of Walmart International. Because in some cases, we are working on long-term growth. So even though it's not a large investment in India, we're starting up an investment in India so that we have a long-term business in what will be a gigantic consumer market over the next few years. So this really is about portfolio management, and that's how we look at ROI also. Is there are some markets like Canada that we look at that and really try to continue to have a high ROI as we convert to Supercenter, but at the same time, we'll start to invest in a longer-term play like we do in India. We don't manage this as kind of a broad brush. We manage it a market at a time and raise the ROIs in each market, which then raises the total over Walmart International. But I'd love someday to say Walmart International has higher ROI than Walmart U.S., but Walmart U.S. is already a business that's been here for a few years, and a lot of our businesses are new businesses that are getting started. That's why we look at it in a different fashion.
Okay, back over here. Adrian.
Thank you. Just, Mike, following on that, you showed a slide where you highlighted the shift in capital allocation from mature to emerging markets, about a 20-point swing. Can you share with us in terms of what implications that has for ROI over the next 5 years?
I probably couldn't give specifics. We don't give the actual data. But what I can tell you is that, and you take a couple of the bits from Andy's presentation, for example, clearly the UK market is a mature market. What a lot of Andy's focus is on, how do you grow sales, profit, and ROI at Asda in the UK? And he mentioned capital light formats like for example, Asda Living or e-commerce were a couple of examples. So in that case, that's a case where Asda can grow ROI without the proportionate increase in CapEx. In the emerging markets, we've been really, really pleased. I'll give Brazil as an example, and that's where some of the shift would take place, would be in markets like Brazil, where the small stores, and then we start to open stores like you've seen the bodegas in Mexico. But one format in Brazil that I think we'll be investing more in and has a lot of implications, Vicente, that you were there, was the Maxi, which is a cash and carry format. It's actually a low capital cash and carry facility that, Craig, what are the sizes of the Maxi? You have, I think, a couple of those in Brazil.
Yeah, we go from 30,000 to about 50,000 square feet. And as you said, Mike, very low capital investment, very nice returns, and a great addition to our portfolio in Brazil and maybe elsewhere.
Craig, you have a lot of the emerging markets. I think Andrew's question also relates even to where that's going. I think the small stores in Mexico, and then your Brazil, and then I think even the new format in Argentina, I think might give you a few more specifics you might mention.
Well, one thing is we actually have over 750 of these stores in Latin America today, these discount stores that Wan Ling mentioned. And what's really exciting is it is, in fact, using the global leverage that Mike talks about every time he talks to you, in that what we've done is we've learned from one another, and quite frankly, we keep getting better. We've got amazing support from Roland Ford and his team on developing an ISD infrastructure for this store that is really capital efficient, Mike, and very different than what we would have had a few years ago. We've had amazing support from Jeff Makow and his team. We just completed a few months ago our first virtual buy trip where, with Jeff's support, we bought product for all of these countries, this particular format. We bought the same product for every country, and nobody traveled for it. Jeff's team did all the work, Mike. And so I think the global opportunity, the global leverage, and the returns are fantastic.
Okay, let's go to the back here.
Hi, thanks. It's Greg Malek with Morgan Stanley. Mike, a bigger picture question in terms of that shift in CapEx to emerging markets. How much of it is in emerging markets where you already are, as opposed to some of these emerging markets like Russia or Eastern Europe or Turkey, or I'll just keep giving a long list. Mm-hmm. As you look at that, are those still on the table, or just given what's gone on the last 6 months in the world, that it's not worth putting your capital and people at risk?
First of all, this particular analysis, Greg, and for all of you, is really based on existing markets. So we've looked out, when we do our five-year planning, we start with a five-year plan that really just starts with the markets we are already in and that we have experience in, we have proven success, and that's what that particular ratio is based on, would be the existing markets. Now, that's not to say that, frankly, other markets of the world that 5 years from now we wouldn't be in, because we will continue to explore other markets, but that particular analysis is 100% based on the existing markets.
Kristen, why don't we get this gentleman?
It's Wayne Hood with BMO. I have just two questions for Ed. By moving to centralized meat processing in Japan, are you giving the competitors kind of an edge in terms of their freshness with respect to meat? And then the second question is, you mentioned earlier that you're going to cut your distribution capacity by 50% over the next couple of years. How do you specifically do that and maintain an in-stock position in those stores?
Okay. The first one about the meat situation, we believe we're going to have a competitive advantage. The stores that have moved to the centralized meat processing have actually had increases in sales. We believe the increase in sales comes from an increase in in-stock. We're able to, you know, ship this product to the stores several times a day. So the freshness is definitely there, and we're able to have the assortment there. And at the peak times, at 7 o'clock and 8 o'clock at night, it's very easy to maintain in-stock. So we see it as a competitive advantage. On the question about distribution, it's not a reduction of 50% of our capacity. It would be a reduction of about 50% of the number of businesses or number of physical facilities. But 2 years ago, we opened a very, very large physical facility, which is the Misato DC. It has gotten a ton of capacity left to be able to go. And what we're doing is maximizing capacity of existing facilities and then closing down some of the smaller facilities. So we believe we're well positioned and simply sweating the assets better.
I was in one of those stores with centralized meat on Friday, and I could tell you, Ed, it looked absolutely fantastic. And all of you would have loved shopping and buying not only meat but produce and other products in the Seiyu store I was in.
Yeah, a customer would not notice the difference. It's the same packaging, same wrapping, same label, same everything as the customer has seen before. It's simply being processed in a centralized facility.
Rick Iceland.
Hi, thank you. My name is Anna Pot. I work for APG Investments in the Netherlands. Thank you for the presentations. In particular, the story about the UK I like very much. And in particular, I was impressed by the success booked with respect to employee satisfaction. I think you made a valid point by underlining that the relation between productivity and employee satisfaction is a very interesting perspective. My question basically is, how will these experiences be used in other parts of the world? Is it an ambition to be the best employer in all the other countries, in particular, for instance, the U.S.? Thanks.
This is the topic of global leverage, and people practices would be one of the very most important areas of global leverage. So, well, it's in some ways starts with talent, you know, the leadership talent. So Vicente, you know, from the practices in Brazil, now leading Asia, David Cheesewright, Andy, who you contributed to David Cheesewright's development. Now David is in Canada as the president of Walmart Canada and came from the UK market, and many other examples. But we really do look at people practices, whether it's at talent, leadership, but also associate engagement and associate opportunity. What I think one of the areas that I really do believe is already in China a competitive advantage but will be long-term for Walmart would be local associate engagement opportunities so that we really focus on developing talent locally. In China, every single store manager is Chinese. The other part about that story is the significant role that of women in leadership that creates the opportunity for the elevation of women in roles from associate to leadership in stores to senior management, because in every one of our markets, 70 to 80% of our customers, and the ones that I visit with typically, are female customers, often moms. And so I think, Andy, you've set a very high standard, and I think that those learnings we take around the world, we do from the U.S. business, what Eduardo showed yesterday, I think is just, it's engaging to look at that engagement, as a matter of fact. And we have a lot from around the world come and learn from what the U.S. is doing. I mentioned next week I'll be in the U.K. with Andy. We also have our partners from India that will be spending time with us. Bharti runs a great organization in India. They're one of the great, great companies of India, and they're a joint venture partner. But we'll spend the time with their senior leaders with ASDA, and a lot of it will be to learn from the people practices and the business practices, but also price leadership and how to give customers really the value that they deserve in India, like Andy's doing in the UK.
Rick, what we get?
You have made tremendous progress in the cost side of the equation. We're just wondering what's going on with your margins. As you bring in everyday low pricing into Japan, for instance, do you get negative margin experience before you begin to mix out? What's going on in the margins and elsewhere in the world?
I think, Michael, it really kind of boils down to that first half report of growing profit, operating profit, at about the same rate of sales. I think I said 13.5% sales increase on a peg raises 13.1%. And really that's because if in addition to focusing on price leadership, there's that simultaneous focus on reducing expense. In some markets, we are starting to get scale where we can have better operating performance and lower operating cost because of the business itself. I think China is a good example there, where we're starting to leverage even better the Trustmart integration and how to grow the market and lower expenses that then help to pay for that. So the true test of that is, does it flow through to operating profit on a quarter-by-quarter basis, and does it lead to improved ROI? And the answer is yes. We do have even more focus on price, but simultaneous focus on reducing expense.
Up here.
Dan Binder, Jefferies. As you've made more progress in Japan, you've given us more information, which is great. I'm just curious from if you can give us any kind of a timeline in terms of a return to profitability there and levels of profitability, longer-term sales growth rates. And I'm guessing you may not, but on the supply chain side, you know, I think my understanding was that one of the obstacles has been trying to streamline supply chain and cutting out middlemen. I'm just curious what kind of progress you've made on that front. And then lastly, on the CapEx front, if it's more of a housekeeping question, but if we take the CapEx from international and U.S., is that total CapEx or are we missing a component?
First, let me answer. Ed, I'd like to take credit for something here today, and I hadn't been able to find anything because of the others up here. But I'll answer for Ed. Ed and the senior team, Ashley, I believe we'll end up with an operating profit this year in Japan. And frankly, I think it's really the beginning of a foundation of building on this year's performance that I'm sure next year will be even better and the following year will be significantly better. That's about as specific as I would be willing to say on that. But I do have to, and part of the reason my visit to Japan last week was the best one that I've ever had is because I do see, Wan Ling, that Japan will have an operating profit this year and improvement compared to last year. Now, I think the other part of the question, I'm sorry. The supply chain and efficiency in the market, Ed or Vicente, I think it's interesting because you've seen businesses in other markets around the world, and you've seen the Japan supply chain, and this question of kind of distribution, middlemen, that's being posed?
First off, I'm really encouraged on Japan on many fronts. And one is the team that we have. Two is the way the consumer is reacting to price and the productivity improvements. I see huge headway being done on the supply chain. We're being able to source more and more directly. Let's say approaching even the 40 to 50% of what we source. We see a huge opportunity as well with direct imports, where we actually are lowering our costs and being able to really offer a much better offer to our consumers. And we see a real improvement, and you see suppliers really partnering with us.
Matter of fact, you know, we do get into details of our business sometimes. And one little one I noticed last week, I read in the newspaper, Ed, that the Japan team had worked directly with one of our major suppliers and was shipping containers of product, of branded product, from the West Coast to the U.S. And that those products got to the Seiyu stores, and the Downy fabric softener that was on end caps in every store that I was in, that was a full containers from the U.S., I believe was at 699 yen, and the competitors I visited were all at 897 to 899 yen for the same product. That's a case where instead of buying and flowing through the multi-handling, multi-channel complex supply chain, Ed and the merchandising team worked directly with that key supplier to give the customer better value and still had a reasonable gross margin that was higher than than other products in that category. You don't mind me using that, do you, Ed? I hope that's okay, because I read about it in the newspaper.
Kristen?
Hi, Sean Buckus from Goldman Sachs. Mike, just a quick question regarding capital expenditures. How are you deciding, you know, who gets what and prioritizing capital expenditures by, you know, country and region and format? And then also, too, just for the aggregate dollar amount, how do you know that that's the right amount that you're spending? Thank you.
Right. That's the allocation, as we talk about there. We manage a portfolio. A really good process is our monthly real estate meeting. We do a lot of video conferencing. As I mentioned, tomorrow we'll be doing it with all the country presidents at 7 a.m. But once a month, Lee, Scott, myself, Tom Shoey, and others sit and approve capital like we do in the U.S., except it's by video conference of all of the markets around the world. You know, I don't like to think of internal competition, but there is internal competition for capital. And the real estate process is part of that process, and it's a very healthy internal competition. We have a hurdle rate, a minimum hurdle, but really that will not do it. In today's world, because of the higher IRR that many of our projects will produce that are higher than the minimum hurdle rate, the countries are actually competing for capital. So that's why the small stores, that's why the Maxi in Brazil, Craig, in some cases, we can see greater IRR or ROI translation from some of the investments there. And we will then produce, you know, a faster where that higher IRR. So it's on one hand, we give more capital to where we have the highest return, and that's not all that complicated. The real estate process is a very quantitative way of doing it. On the other, we do strategically, though, look at the markets and say, how do we protect and grow in mature markets? So that's where Andy with the UK, the Asda Living, is the way the Asda team has come up with a way to compete and receive more capital because it produces a very high return with lower CapEx. So it's, I don't know that they're, you know, I don't know how to give kind of a general answer. It really is specific details, project by project, that's approved by the real estate committee or by the senior team, the regionals and the country presidents, and then up to the home office. Now, the overall level is something, you know, there is, I guess you'd say, somewhat of a calculated, somewhat conservative. In some markets, some people would say we should be a lot more aggressive. I'm not so sure of that. I think it's one that that finding the right balance of how much to invest in starting in a new market like India, where we'll be more conservative, but yet there for the long term, is part of the step-by-step process we go through.
And Mike, if I could add, there's kind of three legs to this stool. You talked about the strategic kind of analysis by country. You talked, secondly, about the individual projects inside countries that the real estate committee looks at. And finally, after the fact, as you'd expect with as much capital as we spend, we go back and we would post-audit projects, not a representative sample of the stores that are approved, but each and every project that we approve, they have to come back and say, how do they actually perform? And as you'd expect, that will influence future decisions that we make on investments. So I think that's an important control as well.
I might add, Tom, that's a really good point. Part of the learning from the post-audit is that would be that larger stores with high CapEx are not exceeding as much as small stores. So the smaller stores that have less capital actually post-audit even better than the large stores with high CapEx. That causes us then to make adjustments. It reduced the square footage, very much like Eduardo said, and is looking at the U.S. So even when we build supercenters in Canada now, we would build a smaller footprint than we would have because of the post-audit process that Tom mentioned.
Mike, I think that's all we have time for. Thank you, and thank you, international team.